Jeff Tryons. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Progress Board.
Welcome, Jeff. We're glad you're here.
Well, thank you, Senator.
You do important work.
I'm very glad to be here. What I was asked to do this morning was to just give the committee an update on what the trends are in terms of the public safety measures that we have, benchmarks, and then just explain some of what's happening in those areas. For your benefit, Representative Smith, just let me very quickly explain a little bit about the Oregon Shines process. I don't know.
I'm very familiar.
You're very familiar. Okay, well, we'll just skip over that then. We'll just go right to the data.
Representative Smith is one who does his homework.
Oh, good. Well, I'm very glad to hear that. So these are the benchmarks that we'll look at this morning. We'll look at overall crime. We'll look at the arrest rate for juveniles, students who carry weapons, the recidivism rate, a new measure that we have for juvenile recidivism, cooperative agreements at the county level in terms of cooperating among various public safety agencies, and then look at emergency management. I'm sure you've seen this, Senator Tro, and I assume you've seen this as well. Most of what I'll report on is in here, but we'll just look at the specific measures that relate to the benchmarks in your committee. As you are probably well aware, the overall reported crime rate has dropped dramatically since 1997. Now, you'll notice that the most recent information we have is 1999. We don't actually have the numbers out for last year yet. But this is not something we've seen for a long time, which is this just free fall.
Really very encouraging.
Yes. Yes, it is. Interestingly enough, though, if you look at where Oregon ranks nationally overall in overall crime, we're still one of the highest ranking states. If you look at this slide, you'll see, and what this compares is Oregon and Washington, with the light blue being Oregon's national rank and Washington, and the kind of royal blue being Washington's national rank. All during the late 1990s, we've been in the 40s in terms of our rank. So Oregon went from 45th nationally in 1995, with one being best, to 41st in 1999. So we've improved some over Washington, which essentially reversed with us. They went from being 42nd to 45th.
So is that based on a per capita? So it takes into consideration populations of each of the states?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith. These are all reported per 10,000, I think. So it's all per capita.
Do you think that's a barometer that sort of goes up and down with such things as economic conditions and drug and alcohol addiction?
Well, there is certainly relationships between the two of them. Now, these are national rankings, though. These are not absolute numbers. So we're looking at how we rank vis-a-vis the rest of the states. It surprised me to see how high Oregon is ranked nationally. So in spite of our dramatic improvement in the overall reported crime rate, we still rank 41st. So we've still got a ways to go. We usually like to think of Oregon being in the 20s in kind of national rankings. We're usually 17th, 19th, maybe 13th. People start to get a little antsy when we get under 25th.
Maybe we're better at getting statistics.
Well, in this instance, I would not make that case.
Okay.
Senator, we've had
so much for that one.
We've had some real struggles with being able to get our statistics in on time, but I think I would not say that Oregon does a superior job in terms of crime reporting. The other argument we often hear when I go out and make these presentations at the county level, if you have one of the counties that's particularly high in crime, the first thing the sheriff will say was, well, we're user-friendly, so people are more willing to report crime because they think something's going to happen. And there is an effect which says, if I don't think anybody's going to do anything about the fact that somebody just came into my house and stole my VCR, I'm not even going to report it because, you know, I haven't got insurance, or the insurance company's not making me report it, so, you know, it won't happen. I think there's a little bit of that, but I think generally when we look at the crime rate, especially on the lesser crime side, we just have a fairly high rate.
Is the rate based on arrests or prosecutions or what?
No, this is strictly reported crimes.
Reported crimes.
Yes, it's not solved crimes. It's not actually having arrested someone. It is you come home, you see your VCR stolen, you call the police and say, somebody stole my VCR. That is then a reported crime. We have moved closer to the national average. Oregon now is we're the light blue here. And you can see the gap back in the early, back in 1998, we had a large gap, between the Oregon average and the U.S. average. Now, last year with the drop, we're dropping faster than the U.S. is. In fact, the U.S. came up a little bit. So Oregon has seen real progress, because a lot of times when you look at these trends, And you see we have one going like this, and then you look at the national average, and it's doing that too. So it's just it's a national trend. But we have made more improvement than has occurred at the national level in the last couple of years. If you look at where that change has occurred, this is the percent change in crime rates between 1990 and 1999. You see that the largest drop has been in the most serious crime area, which is crimes against other people, person crimes. So that's very good, because those are the crimes that we read about in the paper, if you will. We've seen a small increase in the less serious crimes, behavior crimes, and we've seen a modest increase in the middle area, the property crimes.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we draw any correlation between Measure 11 and the person crimes headed down?
Mr. Chair, Representative Canope, that's an excellent question, and there is no definitive evidence that says that is a major cause of it, but there's also no evidence that says it's not. We don't know yet. I mean, we looked into that when we reported on this, and there are people who argue very strongly that it has to do with that law, with that initiative. There are just fewer people on the street who are involved in those kinds of crimes.
Didn't most states have such laws?
I think, Senator, that about 30 states now have laws like this, the one strike, the two strike, the three strike, the those various kinds of laws. And I haven't seen it, and we look for this, and actually staff may know the answer to this, but we looked for this when we were reporting this to see whether there was any real evidence that showed the correlation, and there is some argument now that is the case, but no one's quote proven it.
It would be interesting to study the 30 that have and the mm-hmm. 20 that don't to see whether there's significant difference in the crime rate.
Chair Trill, committee members, there is a about Measure 11 grant study that's in process right now with the Criminal Justice Commission, who starts their budget review tomorrow. We'll probably be able to hear a progress report on that. They're not complete with it yet, but that is the specific mm-hmm. purpose of that grant
yes.
study.
Mm-hmm. And there is a great deal of interest in this, so it is something that's being studied. I just don't think we know the answer yet. The arrest rate has also fallen, like the overall crime rate, the arrest rate for juveniles. We can't report juvenile crime because when your VCR is stolen, you don't know the age of the individual who stole it. So the only thing we can report here is the arrest rate, which is more policy sensitive than the crime rate, which is to say you could be from a local area that locks up every kid who does anything as a way to stop them from committing higher level crimes, or you could be very lenient and only really arrest a kid when something quite serious happens. So this is what we call a policy sensitive measure, if you will, but it does track the arrest rate, I mean the crime rate, pretty closely. If you look at this one and then you put it next to the other one we had for crime rate, they look very much alike. We've seen a dramatic reduction in the arrest rate as well. We're under the target level that we set back in 1990, actually, which was to be at the same rate that we were then. So we're under The arrest rate for 1999 is the lowest it's been in at least 10 years.
Do we see any effects of the governor's programs basically aimed at trying to divert some of those folks from criminal activity?
Mr. Chair, I think the answer would be the same as the Measure 11 answer, which is that, there certainly seems to be some evidence that there is a relationship there, but we aren't able to prove it at this point. We haven't seen a reduction in recidivism the way we've seen a reduction in the overall arrest rate. And you'd think if that high-risk intervention strategy was working, that we'd start to see the numbers come down for recidivism as well.
Just to follow up on what Jeff's comment on that, you'll find when we talk about Criminal Justice Commission, they'll talk about juvenile crime prevention grants and what they're doing to, use that $20 million rolling up to nearly $30 million. And they'll tell you that they've done a lot of things to identify the risk behaviors and target the services to prevent juvenile crime. They can't tell you a lot is the impact yet. And there's information that's being developed. They've got a contract with Portland State University to do some outcomes studies, but it's just premature yet for them to tell you. In fact, they have. It takes a while to measure recidivism.
If I could just follow up on that, the way that their process works for that strategy, and I think it's a good one, Mr. Chair, is rather than trying to prove that Oregon's prevention strategy has had a specific effect, what the process has been is we'll only use proven practices. So we know that these programs work. They've been scientifically proven to work elsewhere. And what we do a lot of is look at how closely we implement that same program on the ground. Because the idea is, if you take a proven practice, you implement it just the way it's supposed to be done. You don't do the Oregon version. You do the way it's been proven to work, and we can show that that's been done that way. Then we have a pretty good idea that we're having an effect.
How's the gang situation, and how does that affect these statistics?
Mr. Chair, I don't know anything about the gang situation. I'm sorry to say.
That I think is an issue that I hear among my colleagues anyway, especially since there's a curtailment of some of the gang prevention activities in the governor's budget. There's real concern about that, so I just wondered if we had any information.
This, Mr. Chair, is one of those issues where we've seen some real progress, and we can sort of step back for a second and take a little breather and say, good, you know, we're really making some progress there. But then the question is, well, if we let up at all, what, you know, will these numbers go back up again?
I'm interested in the period of 1990 to 1996 and what factors led to the incremental increases. Mm-hmm. If you had any thoughts on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, in terms of why those numbers increased so dramatically, I think there are a couple of reasons that I'm aware of. One is that this was a national trend. I mean, we saw these numbers increasing. I think it also had a little bit to do with the age of what's called the cohort, which is we measure this from 10 to 17. So if a 10-year-old is involved in a crime or a 17-year-old is involved in a crime, they all get counted. And if you have a lot of young kids in the cohort, they're going to be less likely to be involved in arrest than if you have a lot of older kids. So I think part of this is that the cohort aged a little bit during the period. That is, there were more 17-year-olds as we went into the mid-1990s than there were in the early part. So a little bit of it has to do with that. And the rest of it, I don't know that we know why the arrest rate went up so much during the period. We saw a dramatic run-up in the use of alcohol, tobacco, and drugs by young people during that same time period, which has also started to come down. That these numbers have gone hand-in-hand over the decade. So I think that's probably part of the reason. I think it's safe to say that alcohol and drug use is more strongly correlated with arrests for young people than it is for crime overall. So we see these numbers, you know, really running hand in hand. There's been some interesting work that Portland State has done, which you may hear about during the course of your hearings, though, that shows that you take the OYA admittees, you know, the kids who are in the system, and you compare them with just regular teens, their drug and alcohol use isn't that much higher, wasn't that much higher than just all teens. The parts where they were really, really low on, though, were what's called family functioning, which is have you got someone who you can, you know, speak to about a problem and you know, all those issues that have to do with having a support system and their success in school. Those were the two areas where there was the strongest correlation. So I think it's, there are a lot of issues in there. We also saw a very significant drop in the dropout rate during that period of time too, and kids who are not in school are more likely to be involved in kinds of situations that cause arrests.
Just one last quick question on that graph for the year 2000. How come when we're seeing incremental decreases, our target allows for an increase?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, that target was set back in 1996. So we didn't know it was going to be so good.
I'll proceed.
Once again, if you look at the arrest rate and you compare Oregon with Washington and Oregon with the U.S., with Oregon being the light blue, Oregon is under the Washington rate, and it's above the U.S. rate. So it looks just like the crime rate. We've actually the arrest rate for juveniles in Oregon looks very much like the overall reported crime rate. We're still above the U.S. average, though. Moving on to emergency response, we only have one county within Oregon, this has been the case since 1997, that didn't have an emergency response plan in place. That's Wheeler County. The next thing that we'll probably be wanting to do with this is looking to see whether those emergency response plans are actually being used, which is to say, if they have a plan, are they doing some sort of an emergency response enactment once a year or every other year? Is there some way that the plans are updated? But this benchmark is almost at 100%. We expect it to stay up there. We may work with the American Red Cross, actually, to improve this one a little bit to make sure that they're actually being used.
Go ahead, Representative Smith.
I think you skipped way ahead.
Yes.
Did we skip?
Yeah. Somehow that slide got stuck in there. That's probably my fault. Let's go back to the arrest rate.
I just had a question on Wheeler County.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman Trevor. How come Wheeler County doesn't have an emergency response plan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I don't know the answer to that. The only thing I know that it is Wheeler County.
Do you know, would it potentially be due to a lack of funding capability for a plan? Did the state provide resources for those plans?
This is something that's coordinated by the state police. I can certainly find out the answer, or you can ask them when they come.
Okay.
I apologize for this slide being out of order. I thought I had a couple more slides that had to do with juvenile arrest, but they weren't there, so I figured I'd just move on. Here, in terms of the improvement in the arrest rate between 1990 and 1999, here we've seen the largest improvement being in the property crime area, primarily the theft area, where we've seen a one-third reduction. Now, we've seen a smaller reduction in crimes against persons, and we've actually seen an increase in the behavior crime. That's everything from runaways to carrying weapons, etc.
Why do you think we've improved there when the other slide showed that property crime is still where we're losing ground generally?
Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that. That may be something that you want to ask either OYA or state police, but I don't know why it's down that much. Yes, it is. Very much so. One of the things we measure is students who carry weapons to school. This is a self-reported survey that the state does every 2 years, and we've actually seen a drop in the reported percentage of students who carry weapons to school. It went from about 19% to 14% over the course of 4 years. Now, that's not a big drop. That's still...
is that a percentage of kids who actually carry weapons?
Yes.
What's a weapon? A gun?
A weapon is widely defined, but it's a knife. It is a firearm of some kind. It is something that you can use to hit somebody. I mean, if you had a hidden like metal rod, that would be viewed as a weapon.
A kid. Every boy had a little knife that you were supposed to have in your pocket, but you didn't use it.
No, and that's not. I don't think that's
a weapon.
In most areas would not be viewed as a common practice these days. But it's the weapon list is pretty well defined. In terms of recidivism, this is the overall recidivism rate. The Progress Board just split out recidivism to have adult recidivism now, and then another measure from now on that only relates to juveniles. You can see that in spite of the dramatic reduction in the crime rate, we still haven't reduced the recidivism rate a lot. So we've got we still have about a third of all people who were paroled having being convicted of a new felony within 3 years. I think it is 1 in 3.
How compares nationally?
I don't know that we have national comparators on that, but I'll look. Actually, if we had it, it would be in this report. Let me just look and see real quick if it's in here. Adult recidivism. We didn't find that number. But let me see.
Do other states have better transition policies and programs and help than we have in trying to move people out of prison into more productive life?
Mr. Chair, I am not aware of transition programs. I know I'm on the board of the Byrne Grant, and we're about to fund adult transition programs because it is so dramatically underfunded in Oregon as it currently stands. At least that's the argument that's made with the Byrne Board. So I don't know whether we have that information or not. I will certainly look and see what we have, though. If we look at the recidivism rate for young people, for juveniles, this isn't measured quite the same way. This is new criminal referrals within 12 months of the initial offense. We still see that over 1 in 3 has a second referral within a year of the initial offense. That's a lot of kids who are repeat.
Do we know whether Measure 11s have any effect on recidivism? You would think if they were in prison and they were really, you know, there for a long time because of this mandatory minimum sentence, that they wouldn't want to go back again for another long time.
Well,
does it have that effect?
I think they're still there is the problem, Mr. Chair. These are only people who have been released and then are back in the system again. So if you're a Measure 11 kid, you're not out of jail yet, most probably, since it started. So they wouldn't be in the statistic. But we still have a lot of reoffense. A lot of reoffense.
But as a deterrent, it still isn't completely effective.
We'd probably want to look at what the new referrals were for, the kinds of crimes. I have no idea of the awareness that young people have of whether they're involved in a Measure 11 type offense activity or not. That they may know. They may go, whoop, this is over the line. Well, I'm not doing that, but I'm going to risk it to do this instead. We'd have to look much. We could do it. We could see what the referrals were for, and look and see if they were the same kinds of crimes, whether there was an escalation, or not? Okay, now moving on to where I skipped to earlier, which is preparedness. This is the second kind of a measure that we have in terms of counties being involved in preparing themselves to work cooperatively or having an emergency plan. And this is something the state police is involved in, which is developing a cooperative policing agreement within the counties. We show that over 80% of the counties had it in 1999, from almost none having it in 1996. The police think that they'll be up by last year, that they think they would have probably achieved just about 100%. Looking at the grades, these are the most improved grades that we've had in Oregon since I started to issue grades for benchmarks in 1996. This is like a home run. You'll notice that the A there with the C that's crossed out. We got new data from LEDS, the Law Enforcement Data System, last week, where they updated their reported arrest rates for 1999, which is, as I said, the most recent we still have is 99. We don't have 2000 yet. And that's an issue which I would very much wish Oregon would solve, which is how long we have to wait to get crime numbers. But you'll see we've got A. The recidivism is the only low grade, if you will, which is a B minus. And for any of you who are familiar with the grades that the Progress Board usually issues with benchmarks, you know that we don't give a lot of A's. This is really a dramatic improvement in our report card since 1998. Looking at how agencies line up with benchmarks, we have something that we do every 2 years with the budget process, which is agencies have to identify which of the benchmarks they have links to. And the ones with the stars are the what we call the primary links, which means they are trying to affect the trend. So you'll notice that for each of these, we have at least one agency that has a primary link. We also ask agencies to show which of them are the lead on them. And I haven't got that information, but it is in the Blue Book if you're interested in that. But the one that we don't have any agency that says it has any primary responsibility for is students carrying weapons to school. That to me is an area where we ought to have an agency that says, yeah, we worry about that. We try to affect that trend. We don't have one single agency in all of Oregon state government that says, yes, we're going to step up and we're going to take responsibility for trying to reduce those numbers.
Would that logically be the Department of Ed?
Mr. Chair, I would think that would be the first place to look is the Department of Ed, yes.
But there is no benchmark or anything.
They're not even signed up as an agency that has any involvement in students carrying weapons to school. So the only ones we show are the law enforcement related agencies, but they all just say, well, we're aware of that. We want to track it, but we're not going to sign up for it as an agency that's really saying, yes, we're going to try and affect that trend. We also, so you can see here which of the agencies actually have a...
Have you communicated that to the Department of Ed?
I have not specifically sent a letter to them at this point. We were looking to see how agencies came back in this time around, and we do the Blue Book with the Department of Administrative Services. I haven't met with Teresa McHugh yet to go over where we have lead agencies, where we don't, but that's one of the things that's on my list to get them to write that letter. Because for some reason, if DAS does it, it has more influence than if I do it. I don't exactly understand why, but it seems to.
It may not with the superintendent, because the superintendent is somewhat independent,
yes,
of DAS,
right.
So that's part of the problem.
Yes, there. That is true. The other thing that you can see here is these are the agencies that are in front of you, and these are the the ones that have signed up and said they have some primary link with one of the benchmarks, or they don't have any primary link with benchmarks.
I should mention it while the budget's being reviewed.
Yes.
LFO could remind us, I think that might happen.
Yes.
There's influence.
It's sort of interesting to me because one of the primary elements that they need to provide in a learning environment is that the student needs to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're 14% still carrying weapons,
yes,
somebody's not feeling safe.
And you know, Mr. Chair, it may just simply be that when the Department of Ed reviews the benchmarks, they just look at the education ones, and they never even make it over to the public safety ones. And that it may simply be that when we raise it with them, they'll go, "Oh, well, sure, we have a program for that. Sure, you know, sign us up for it." But it's not there, and it hasn't been there for at least a couple of years. So I just want to close for a minute with some results that we have in terms of how the public views Oregon's ability to provide public safety services. We do a Oregon population survey every 2 years where we ask the public, among other things, how good a job is Oregon doing at? And one of those things is fighting crime. So this is a list of all of the things that we ask Oregonians about, ranked from highest to lowest. You can see that on top, the perennial champion of Oregon public services is community colleges. They're always at 90% or higher, and next is parks. And those are the ones that, ever since we've been asking these questions, Oregonians regularly say are doing a good or excellent job. You'll see that all government is the fifth one down there. So almost 80% of Oregonians, when polled, said that all government did a good or excellent job, which is a consistent number. This is just about the same number we've been getting ever since we started asking these questions.
Great. Mr. Chair, is this a poll as we would understand a poll, a scientific poll?
Absolutely.
And the margin of error?
It's about 2%, maybe 2.5%.
Okay.
So it's
a good,
yes,
solid.
Oh, it's done by a professional firm. It's been vetted out, over and over again. Yeah,
You look at it regionally to see if there's any place where that message is not out there, the government does a good job.
Mr. Chair, we do not have a large enough sample to break this down regionally and say anything meaningful about it other than the Willamette Valley, maybe in the rest of the state, would be the only way we'd be able to split it out. We just don't have enough sample size to be able to.
And all government would be national, state, local?
No, it's all Oregon government.
All Oregon government, right. I mean state?
State and local.
State and local. Okay.
How good a job is Oregon doing at providing government services in general?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As it relates to the crime factor here, 75% think Oregon's doing a good job. Is it possible that 1 in 4 Oregonians are a victim of crime annually, and it's the 25% who are the victims that say, "Hey, we're not doing a very good job"? 75%. I'm just curious, where would we be in terms of that? How many Oregonians are affected by crime each year?
Ms. Chair, Representative Canope, I've never made that calculation. We could look at reported crime per 1,000, and we could, so we have 100, let's say we have 100 Oregonians per 1,000. That's 1 in 10 who reports a crime in a year. So that would be 1/10 of the 25%. So, I mean, that's still a lot of people, 1 in 10 who now, this assumes that an individual only reports one crime in 1 year. If you reported 3 crimes in 1 year, it would still be counted as 3 crimes reported per capita. But still, as a rough number, that 1 in 10 is probably in the group that's not saying Oregon's doing a good job.
Well, then if you add to that the 1 in 10 that's also doing the crimes, and then you start getting closer.
Yeah.
you can test it to 25%.
Pretty quickly.
Do you know what generally the attitude, what the concept, the generally held concept of government is? Does it include education, for instance? Does it, when people talk about government, what are they thinking? Are they thinking universities? Are they thinking public schools? Are they thinking community colleges? Or are they thinking county government as they narrowly think it and state government as?
Well, because of the way we ask these questions, Mr. Chair, and we ask them all of these areas, how good a job do you think Oregon's doing for community colleges, for four-year colleges, for air and water, we've pretty much got them in the mindset of what government services are. When they get asked, they all question. So, and this is a pretty comprehensive list.
Is that the last question?
I'm pretty sure it is the last one, Mr. Chair. And you'll notice, interestingly, the lowest ranked and the consistently lowest rank is Oregon's ability to fight drug use. We've seen little improvement. If we look at the improvement numbers, we started asking these in 1994, and I think part of this has to do with Measure 11. Part of it has to do with just all of the information that's been in the press about Oregon fighting crime. We've seen a 33% improvement in the ranking for Oregon's ability to fight crime since 1994. Mm-hmm. So a dramatic increase. We've also seen a pretty significant increase in the ranking for the use of drugs.
I'm just still curious about the population that you select.
Mm-hmm.
How are the people that are polled selected?
It is a random phone survey.
Based on phone book or
it is
random and registered voters?
We hire a firm who hires another firm that specializes in random phone numbers that are weighted by population. So if everybody who answers the phone is in Klamath Falls when we do this random thing, because there is a tendency for older people to be home more, and in areas where there are more older people, then there's a likelihood that more people are going to answer the phone on the first call. So we try and weight that in a bit, so we have a pretty representative phone sample. What we don't get is people who don't have phones. If you don't have a phone, then you're not going to get polled. So we know that about 3% of Oregonians don't have phones. We'll actually know from the census very soon what that is now, but we estimate it's anywhere from 3 to 5%. They have a tendency to be lower income than your average Oregonian. So there is the only thing that we're aware of that is not random about this poll is that we don't get people who don't have phones.
It'd be lower income or ex-legislators.
Go ahead.
There's a concept that I've heard in some of the polling I'm familiar with, that people are starting to raise the issue in terms of the number of people that, even though they have phones, that are relatively suspicious of government, relatively suspicious of institutions, that just absolutely under no circumstances will ever respond to a pollster. Mm-hmm. And that maybe all of our polling is, there's a real hidden group of people that just are not going to respond, and that they may have a tendency to be more anti-government or more suspicious of institutions, certainly. And I'm wondering if that's ever came up in your discussions with your pollster.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I know that that's a problem. I mean, you have people who refuse, but we have a very good acceptance rate according to the pollster. Because we call up, we're saying we're doing this for state government to be able to do a better job. About 11 agencies actually pay for this. It's not just a progress board, and they use it for a whole range of things. We ask people, how long does it take you to get to work? We ask people, do you have access to health insurance? We ask them just a whole lot of stuff which agencies use, and we've been pretty pleased with the level of cooperation that we've gotten in terms of folks saying yes. Now, I don't think that the refusal rate has gone up significantly since 1990, which is when we started to do the poll. If you'd like me to find out the answer to that, though, I would be happy to. Okay.
Any other questions?
Well, I would just comment that it does have the, in looking at it, the ring of truth. I mean, I suppose if I could try to, as hard as I could, just kind of be objective, I agree pretty much with those rankings. And although the K through 12 does surprise me, given some of the issues that we've had with funding K through 12 in the last few years, I'm surprised that it ranks.
There's a big difference between those who have kids in the schools and those who don't.
Well, that's a good point, too. Yeah, that's a good point. But definitely, I have the same, I'd say like the top three or four, I would probably rank right where they're at.
We've seen it, as you'll notice, in the improvement since 1994. One of the things that interests me is that we've seen an increased public perception of the quality of the work we're doing in K through 12. If you would think from what you read in the paper that it would be the opposite, that you know the schools are, you know, they're just falling apart. Now, equalization is part of that. I mean, there are a lot of schools that did pretty well during the mid 1990s. So, but what you hear about is the schools that are having a hard time.
Right.
So, I mean, overall, Oregonians think that the quality of K through 12 education has improved since 1994. The only areas that haven't improved are infrastructure and healthcare, really. And that's probably right.
Well, it is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So then the last slide would just show the changes between 1998 and 2000. We've seen quite a lot of action in between those years. The biggest area that improved was four-year colleges and universities. Maybe people actually follow what the legislature does in terms of funding. I don't know. I mean, that's one of the only things. Now, this was fielded last May, so this wouldn't have anything to do with Oregon and Oregon State's ranking in terms of football, which is what some people instantly go to. They go, well, you know, when football's doing better, then people think more highly of the schools. So that's the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any other questions, comments you have. I have three follow-ups here. One is recidivism. We're going to get what we can on that. One is I will find out where we ask the government, the all-government one, in terms of whether it's at the beginning or the end, because that's a very important thing I never thought of before. And then we'll also look at what's happened with the refusal rate in terms of the poll itself. And if it's okay, I'll just write one letter and send it to you and just send it to all the members at the same time.
Any other questions you think you'd like to have them look into? One of the things I think that the changes that we're going to get when we get the corrections budget is that the governor really cuts back in some of the penal institutions on programs for mm-hmm. prisoners and yard time and some other kinds of things. My guess is, I don't know whether that affects recidivism, but my guess is that will affect attitude and behavior mm-hmm. problems within the mm-hmm. institutions rather dramatically. And so, but is there any way to measure that? I doubt it.
Well, that's a question that I know Ways and Means has been more interested in asking agencies to tell how they measure their performance this time around. Mm-hmm. And I would be making sure corrections was measuring that. I mean, because they do a pretty good job, actually, of managing with numbers. And I would make sure that they had something in their measurements that said, let's make sure we are on top of how these changes are affecting the attitudes of the inmates and behaviors.
We know that a lot of them are there have real education deficits. We know that a lot of the people there have drug and alcohol problems. We don't know how effective maybe trying to address those problems are in the institutions, but if they would address, I think just common sense would say that that should help them with an adjustment on the outside.
Well, I would certainly hope that we don't stop doing literacy work with inmates as part of this. I mean, one of the things that Oregon does really, really well is every time we are able to touch an Oregonian with some kind of public service, we, whenever it's appropriate, help them with their literacy. So if you're in a correctional institute, you do literacy training if you haven't got it. If you're on welfare, you do literacy if you haven't got it. And that's a really, really important aspect of what we do in Oregon State Government.
I wonder, literacy might be complicated as we have a more diverse population, and some of those people get sent to institutions. They have language problems. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it makes sense to do work with language.
Well,
maybe that's the place to have English immersion rather than in the public schools, where we ought to do it more scientifically.
Well, there was just an article in the paper yesterday about the shooting that occurred in the mental institution of the Mexican man the other day, last week, and now they're beginning to say that they think that language may have played some part in that, because nobody who was involved with them spoke Spanish, and they were doing it all with hand signals from the get-go, from the time he tried to get on the bus and he didn't have 20 cents. You know, that man essentially died because he didn't have the 20 cents he needed to get on the bus that day. And language did play a part, without any question.
Go ahead.
Just a comment, and that's, I think this is incredibly valuable information. But one of the areas that I get somewhat suspicious of, when we see crime rates reported, arrest rates, there are so many intangibles. For example, during this decade, Multnomah County increased their juvenile justice spending from $4 million a year to $16 million a year, which has got to change a lot of attitudes in the early 90s. I think there was a feeling by the police officers that there was no, why bother? You know, why bother to do an arrest? Nothing was going to happen. Kids were routinely lost in processing. The juvenile facility was under real strict caps and orders, and I think there was a feeling in terms of law enforcement officers that, well, they're not going to do anything, so why bother to even cite and charge them? So how that fits in terms of all of a sudden you've created a relatively effective system, that are the police actually arresting compared to maybe on the street giving them a strong lecture or trying to scare them or some taking some other action, and what that, you know, is the same kind of activity occurring in 92 as happened in 98, but we in society are dealing with it in a different manner, hopefully a more effective manner. Same thing on parole violations. I mean, we've had the parole officers almost can turn the spigot on or off if they think that there are sanctions in place that, yeah, we can revoke a parole or we can bring them in for an administrative hearing, they will. On the other hand, if they don't think anything's going to happen, they don't. So all of a sudden you can see, you know, surges and spikes that you start thinking, well, yeah, there's a lot more activity. Something like people self-reporting whether they've been a victim of a crime, I think, is probably pretty consistent. But then how we deal with that crime after it occurs may vary dramatically based on the number of cops on the street, the number of parole officers, how effective the DAs are in handling complaints that are filed.
The bed ceiling at OYA.
Yeah. You know, Yeah, that if there's not a bed, maybe the district attorneys are handling the cases differently and pleading them down differently and how the judges react to them. Anyway, all of these are good, you know, it's good benchmarks and stuff, but sometimes I think it's maybe like peeling an onion, that there's lots of different layers and there's lots mm-hmm. of different ways to look at the same information. And unless you're pretty close to it, you may not you may miss, it's real easy to misread the information in terms of what is actually going on.
If I could just comment on that just for a minute, Mr. Chair, I think that is one of the values of me coming up ahead of the big agencies, is you can also ask them to comment on those very issues. But I also think that if you look at what's happened in Oregon since the early 1990s, Oregon geared up around crime. There is no question that this has been a major policy issue in the legislature, in state government for quite a few years now. And I think part of that is we're beginning to see some results. And I think Oregon should take a minute every once in a while and say, hey, you know, we put a whole bunch of resource into this, we put a whole bunch of attention on it, and something positive is happening. And we, you know, we need to take some credit for that. So I would agree with you, as I was saying a little earlier, a lot of these things are very policy sensitive, and depending upon how you approach them, you can run the numbers up and down relatively easily. But I think over time, and in general, it's safe to say that Oregon has seen a significant reduction in criminal activity on the part of both adults and young people, and that's a very good thing.
We're locking up a lot more people, though, as one of the ways to get at that.
That is absolutely true, Mr. Chair.
Do you do the comparison of how many folks we lock up in terms of our population as compared to other states?
I think we can actually find that. I don't have it. It's not one of the benchmarks, but I would be happy to include that in the letter if you like, Mr. Chair.
And I wonder also if somehow or other we could look at the perception gap, what people think about the crime rate as compared to what it really is, and see whether or not sensational journalism creates some paranoia about crime that also affects policy.
There have been lots of studies on that, which I'm sure your committee staff would be able to write down for you.
Okay.
Just a snap
you don't
of a
need
finger.
To do that one. Huh? Have you ever done one?
No, we haven't looked at that, but I've seen reference to it on a number of occasions. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it for me, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure. Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Anything else we need to do?
Just that we wanted to have this before you got into the Criminal Justice Commission budget, the corrections budget, and the Youth Authority budget, just as a background piece, because we're going to be dealing with significant investments of general fund dollars there. Criminal Justice Commission starts tomorrow. They've got the Juvenile Crime Prevention Package that was approved last biennium, rolls up this biennium. And just wanted to have this background information for you before we get into that. Appreciate you being here, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. We'll start that tomorrow.
Okay. Meeting's adjourned.